Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today will be a pop culture edition. It's also a retrospective program in which we highlight a guest I had on the air way back in the year 2008. One of my frequent rotating co-hosts back then used to be film critic Mark Booby, and he will continue to join us on the program again in the future. He hasn't been able to for a while. Anyway, I have been toying with the idea of replaying this particular program for several weeks now. I've had some on and off hesitations, and that's because of the season. Yes, the season. Originally in 2008, I had Mark on toward the end of the year as we were getting into Christmas time. It had become a tradition with me to share Christmas movie reviews, and I thought it would be fun to ask Mark to share some favorite holiday movies of his own. I know what you're thinking. Bob, why are you sharing Christmas movie reviews in April? Is this some kind of April Fool's gag? Fair question, my friend. Fair question. The reason, quite frankly, is that not one single movie on Mark's list was a Christmas movie. But in some cases, the film might have taken place at Christmas time or related to God on some level. It was really a stretch. Now, those who know Mark are already familiar with his somewhat unorthodox views of movies, so I guess I shouldn't have been too surprised. But honestly, I don't think even Ebenezer Scrooge himself would put these movies on his Christmas list. A fun program to be sure, and a different creative program. Believe me, there was nothing about these films that made me think I needed to replay the program at Christmas time. Anyway, here we go. From 2008, from my broadcast show, the sound quality of the recording is different, but you'll be able to follow it and understand it just fine. And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but the Christians you've met do not know how to think outside the box. They are so predictable. You know what they're going to say before they even say it. You even know what they'll say about movies. Well, not entirely, because today we welcome back a Christian who is as unpredictable as they come. Film critic Mark Boobian. He is going to talk about holiday movies. Now, I know what you're thinking. You think he's going to list It's a Wonderful Life or Miracle on 34th Street. Well, those are the movies I would pick, but try again. Bucko, this is a man who finds Christian symbolism in unexpected places, and that, of course, includes Christmas symbolism. How about holiday movies like Full Metal Jacket, Eyes Wide Shut? You think I'm kidding? No, this is Mark Boobian. If you've heard him before, you won't think I'm kidding. Can you just imagine that? And now, back to the NBC holiday special, Eyes Wide Shut by Stanley Kubrick. Well, all right, he's going to be on, and it is going to be interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, we're really going to push it today, I think. So,
holiday movie, your favorite holiday movies, and not the kind of movies that Christians would expect, probably not the kind of movies that anybody, non-Christians, that anybody would expect.
Yeah, it's sort of the unconventional Christmas. Now, I'm hoping that there's a movie here for everybody, because I tried to cover all my bases. They all have some sort of reference to Christmas, so we'll see.
So basically, any movie that mentioned the word Christmas and it's somewhere made your list?
Somehow? Oh, come on. I'm not... Okay,
yeah. I mean, a movie you liked. I mean, you would have liked it for other reasons.
Yeah, I had pretty weak criteria. It just had to have something to do with Christmas, and then it had to be a good movie.
I think some of those movies about the Holocaust, they mentioned Merry Christmas in places.
Yeah, right. Like, okay, you know. Well... Right. Not too many downer movies, though.
Okay.
Let's see. Well, let's start off with a movie that's absolutely not a downer at all. Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Now, I love that movie.
Yeah, this is the Christmas movie for
people
that need
to lighten up. I
wouldn't
have thought of it as a Christmas movie, except that they do have the manger scene at the beginning.
There you go. You scored, Bob. That's all it takes.
That's right. That was enough to make the cut.
And it's hilarious, though. I mean, that scene is absolutely awesome. It sort of sets the theme for the whole movie, that the three wise men come in
and
to the wrong manger.
Because the whole theme of the movie is people are constantly mistaking Brian for Jesus.
Exactly.
So it begins even when he's a baby.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now, the interesting thing about this movie is I have a DVD, and the review inside the DVD cover really kind of tries to make it sound like this is a send-up of Christianity, a scathing criticism of mainstream Christianity. And, you know, I actually never saw this movie as that, and I really don't understand how you would, unless you just really look at the surface. And I know a lot of people really do tend to look at the surface of films. When I was a kid, I was raised Catholic. I wasn't allowed to see this movie because my parents were not about to let me go see a movie about a fake Jesus. There's no way. But, you know, my response is, oh, come on. Jesus is in the movie. Come on, give me a break. He actually makes an appearance at least once.
And yeah, when he was given the Sermon on the Mount, the they thought he said, blessed are the cheesemakers instead of blessed are the peacemakers.
Is that what he says, really?
Yeah, people are like, what did he say? Oh, he said, blessed are the cheesemakers. Yeah. Isn't that lovely?
Yes. Right. Well, I don't understand why they would want to follow Brian then, because they're hearing great stuff. But I think one of the points of the film is that people are picking their Messiah. They hear stuff they don't like to hear. Because really, it takes off when at the Sermon on the Mount scene, they're hearing stuff they don't necessarily want to hear, and so they latch onto Brian instead of Jesus.
Yeah, I should say they're not so much mistaking him for Jesus, per se, as much as mistaking him for being another Messiah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's the one they want. It's
And, you know, I heard so many horrible things about it from the church. My view on Monty Python, and of course there's other Monty Python movies and Monty Python's Holy Grail, is that they just want to have fun.
Right. I agree.
I didn't feel they were having fun at Christians. And frankly, as one who studied first century Christianity in ancient Rome, it's darned historically accurate. Well, not the part where the spaceship comes down and picks up Brian.
Yeah, I'm sure that.
The Romans and some of the underworld Jewish organizations where the tension between the People's Front of Judea and the Judean People's Front, they were doing identical things,
right.
But they were bitter enemies. I mean, it was a fun movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great movie. It's great fun. So, you know, lighten up and go see. Now, this isn't actually my favorite. You mentioned my favorite Monty Python movie. The Holy Grail is, I think, one of the funniest movies absolutely
ever
made.
The Holy Grail, I think, probably is even more funny than Life.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I couldn't find any Christmas reference there anywhere, so it's not on the list.
You know,
but, you know,
I need to mention, a number of years ago, I was doing open-air evangelism every day out at the University of Minnesota, and on the last day, some atheists came out, and they were hoping to slam it to us Christians, so they handed out leaflets inviting people to Life of Brian because they knew how much the church hated it. And I walked up to these guys and I said, I love Life of Brian. And it was really a good chance to break down some stereotypes. And I took the Christian club that had sponsored me. I said, you guys should show up when they screen Life of Brian. You should sit in the front row and just laugh your freaking heads off, and you will give people a fresh, less conventional, and perhaps more accurate view of Christianity.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, the movie doesn't have anything. It's not a scathing criticism of Christianity.
They were just trying to
I don't know where it comes from. But again, we like to look at the surface. That's one of the things that I've talked about before on your show, is that with the arts, Christians and a lot of people at large don't want to look deeper than the surface.
That's right.
And so you're not going to see that. You're going to see the trailer for the film.
And in the trailer,
gosh,
they're dancing on the cross, singing, always look at the bright side of
right,
life. So,
yeah.
It doesn't quite look like the Holy Chapel with Jesus up there.
So. Yeah, exactly. So it's Christians have to lighten up. So that's why it's the Lighten Up Christmas movie.
That is a good saying. Christians have to lighten up. I like that.
Yeah. So now the next movie on the list is actually a sort of a sleeper, a very small film. I actually learned about it in church, of all places. Our pastor showed two scenes from this film, and he showed the middle and the end. And
now, how could you have sat through that, Mark?
I know.
This is Mr. I refuse to know anything
exactly
about the movie before I go.
My pastor has a very different view about spoilers than I do.
Mark
he
and I are friends.
Care.
I got to tell you, you don't want to make the mistake of telling Mark about a movie, not unless you can duck.
Yeah, I didn't hassle him about it, though. It was a good, it was actually good. It made me want to see the movie anyway, so it actually worked out okay. I didn't realize it was the end of the movie until, wait a second, this is the end of the movie at the last 2 seconds. Oh, come on. Okay.
Well, that's no different than what every trailer shows. They show you everything, first, second, and last scene.
Right, that's true, which is why I actually walk out during the trailers in most movies, which I scare people when I do. They think I'm crazy.
It's probably a good habit to get into.
But this is a movie actually about a dwarfish boy. He's got a birth defect. He's tiny, and he's partly crippled. But he believes that God has a plan for his life. Even though he has absolutely no idea what that plan is, he says, I'm going to be a hero. God has something planned for me.
And did you mention what this one is called yet?
Simon Birch. Did I forget that? Okay.
I have not seen this one, so I'll have to take your word for it that it's good.
It's actually very well done. It's a little bit on the there's a Jim Carrey's actually the narrator of the film.
No kidding.
Yeah, and Ashley Judd is in it. So there's some famous people associated with this film. But it's a little bit the narration's a little heavy-handed at times. However, it's still a very good movie, very emotional. There's a lot of sadness in the film as well as a lot of joy. And it shows, I think, the dichotomy of life where from great sadness can come great joy. That's one of the elements I see in the film. But
you're saying the theme is God? He believes God has a plan?
The theme is actually faith. Now, this is, I think I've mentioned also before that I don't see Hollywood doing a very good job with faith. Yeah, I think I've talked to you about this outside of the show where we talked about Prince Caspian, the second Narnia movie.
The Narnia series.
Yeah, now that book is actually a lot about faith. The book itself is about faith.
And they deleted some of that for the movie.
Yeah, they basically threw it all out. You know, there's one scene in the movie where Aslan, the Christ figure, says, "Trust me." Okay. And then that's it. They get, okay, climb on, let's ride. And, you know,
I was as much as Hollywood was willing to bend with that.
I definitely didn't think they quite understood what faith was all about at that point. But the book itself does examine what faith is. In this movie, Simon Birch also examines faith from two different perspectives. Or Simon's perspective, we don't learn why he believes this at all. It's never told to us. He just believes it. But you don't get the sense that it's a blind faith. He trusts. It's a childlike type of faith. But his best friend, Joe, he struggles more with faith. And he actually says one line in the movie. He says, "I have faith. I just need proof to back it up." And that's, I think, a very honest view of faith. And there's people like that's actually more my sort of attitude about faith.
And that qualified it to be a holiday movie.
Yes, exactly. That's all it took. But that
Well, I'm glad that in their own right these are good movies. I guess the point here is you should see these movies whether it's holiday season or not.
Yeah, but they fit now because you get a little Christmas scene in this one, so I think it works out.
Yeah, we used to watch
well.
The Grinch and then Charlie Brown and then Simon Birch. Those were our family
that's
traditions.
Right.
We always traded off those.
We always do. Every year since 1998 when Simon Birch was released. That's right. So Simon's actually plays Jesus. The Mother Mary is leaning over him. It's a girl that he actually has a crush on. And
she's
playing his
mother
up to grab her.
Uh-oh.
And all hell breaks loose at that point. And it's quite fun. It's very funny. But in the aftermath of this.
Oh, my goodness. In a Christmas pageant, and it's just his own. She's supposed to be his mother. And
yeah. And so, but in the aftermath, he's called into the pastor's office. And the pastor, he has this very interesting conversation with the pastor about faith. And the pastor's final line is, "It's wonderful to have faith, Simon, but don't overdo it." And, you know, here you pretty much lose the pastor at this point. He doesn't really understand what faith is, and he's actually sort of tearing Simon down. And this is Simon's challenge throughout the film, is to hold on to his faith, as I said, and live up to what he believes that God has called him to. And I think that's one of the great challenges for Christians, is to remain faithful at all times. I mean, that's the challenge. I am not good at that. And to see a movie like this and to see it depicted so well is very refreshing, coming from Hollywood. And the director went on to direct movies like Ghost Rider, which is a comic book movie. He wrote Elektra, another comic book movie. So this is a Hollywood movie. This isn't just like a Christian niche movie. This is a Hollywood film. And
now, why
it's
did
very
the pastor
Christian.
Feel he was overdoing it? Because he talked so much about God?
Because he talked so much. Simon really, truly believed that God had called him to do something. He had faith in that. He said, "I have faith in this." And he challenged the pastor at every moment, and he was very much in the right. The pastor was not.
That's really interesting, because when I converted to Christianity out of a Jewish family, I went back to all my friends who went to church, Catholics, Protestants, and several of them said that to me. They said, "Bob, it's nice to have faith, but don't overdo it." They did not seem to really understand what I meant when I claimed that I'd had an experience with Jesus Christ, even though they had grown up in the church.
Yeah, and with Simon Birch, they don't know what to do with him because his faith is so much a part of his life. They really are at a loss as to what to do with him. And, I mean, the movie is just wonderful about the exploration of faith. And again, from both sides, his friend Joe, the exploration of faith through Joe's eyes as well is very real and very moving. So I felt the movie was
well. You've piqued my curiosity, and I'm not just saying that because you're a guest. I think I'm going to actually rent that thing.
Yeah, and hey, I saw it after getting the worst spoiler possible, so that tells you something, doesn't it? Okay, so now the next movie is one of the movies you mentioned earlier, Full Metal Jacket. Now, this gets on the list because they sing Happy Birthday to Jesus in the film.
It's a Vietnam. This is Vietnam. Stan, movie. I saw this movie and it was excellent. It's
yes.
Vietnam. This is Kubrick, isn't
Kubrick.
It?
Kubrick. Anything he does is excellent. Anything he does deserves to be on the list.
But it gets on the Christmas list because
Happy Birthday to Jesus. It's a very, you know, for me, I have friends that go see horror movies at Christmas time. Some people do. I don't get it, but. You know, I don't think any of them would dare to see Full Metal Jacket because this scene to me is probably the single most disturbing Christmas scenes in all of history. It just goes against everything that I was raised with about Christmas. I was Catholic. I was raised Catholic. I had the mix of the religious and the secular both, but it just grates against everything you think of about Christmas because it's stripped down to just nothing. I mean, it's all of the spirit, joy, and even the humanity of this event is taken away in this one moment. And you see it there in stark relief. That's one of the great things about
Kubrick. You're not going to tell them what the moment is?
Sing Happy Birthday to Jesus, that's the moment right there.
Now, why is it that singing Happy Birthday to Jesus would have a negative effect on you?
Because you've got to see the movie. Because
I did see the movie. It's been so many years, I'm not remembering that.
Well, the context is there.
I just remember
barracks.
A guy named Pyle that they named after Gomer Pyle.
Yes,
that was just horrifically treated.
Exactly.
The
well, they're all horrifically treated. That's part of the point. And part of the horrific treatment is for Christmas, they don't get anything except they sing Happy Birthday.
Oh, I see.
And then that's it.
So it's just you're in Vietnam and you're...
Yeah, well, this is that they're being trained. They're in boot camp at this point. And but they're being... Their humanity is being stripped away. And this is one of the... I think this is one of the elements that illustrates that very stark... It's a very stark illustration of their humanity being taken away. And it's just one moment. But these moments pile on each other as the movie progresses. And we see this one... The main character, whose nickname is Joker, actually hangs on to his humanity until the very last moment of the film. And it's a very dark, dark film because there's a point in the movie where the narration says the Marine Corps doesn't want robots. They want thinking, feeling human beings who can make decisions for themselves. But exactly the opposite is what the Marine Corps has created in this film. And they steal away the people's humanity and turn them into robots. And that is not at all what God would want from us. He doesn't want us to make decisions based on, you know, he doesn't want us to blindly follow him is what I'm actually trying to say here. And they are forced into this sort of blind following of leadership.
Because they've got to be able to take orders quickly and not second judge them. But on the other hand, if there was going to be something like a My Lai massacre, they've got to still have enough of a conscience to kick in and say, okay, in this particular case, I can't follow orders.
That's right. And we sort of see something like that at the end of the movie where our main character has to do something so terrible that that's the moment he loses his humanity, so to speak. So now, on a little brighter note, the next movie on the list is The Truman Show.
Oh, that was a wonderful movie.
It is a very good movie. And
one of the few Jim Carrey movies I like.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I like him better when he actually acts instead of just climbing the walls and putting the lampshade on his head.
Yes. Well, this is a Peter Weir film, and Peter Weir is the one that turned Robin Williams into a serious actor with Dead Poets Society. Jim Carrey wanted the same thing, basically.
That's an interesting claim to fame for a director to have, to work with raw material and find the good acting in them.
As he gets older, the things grow, and it's sort of the ultimate reality TV show. But he doesn't know that he's in this TV show. Everything around him is completely false.
It was talking about a reality show before reality shows were actually on.
Yeah, TV. It was. Yeah,
I remember seeing that going, boy, it's hard to believe they could have a program like that.
And yet now
that's
the...
about all they have now. It's,
yeah.
it's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, not quite like this because he doesn't know that he's in reality.
It's right. Just... But even the concept of any reality show at all, they didn't really have.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. But to communicate to you sort of the life that he's lived, they do a montage sequence and you see a few scenes of Christmas, of course, because as he's a child, Christmas is an important part of that. So that's how it gets onto this list. But again, it's a great movie.
It is a wonderful movie.
And it has a very powerful message to somebody. To me, as a Christian, a very powerful message. Because unlike Full Metal Jacket, where it's destroying humanity. This is finding humanity in a way. It's finding the truth about life. Truman lives in a false world.
And he has a false god, the guy who created the show. It's like, and even at the end where he's talking to him through the megaphone, you know.
Yeah, the line
is. It sounds like the voice of God to Truman.
Yeah, and the line is actually, I am the creator of a TV show that you're a part of. So it's a beautiful, beautifully done movie. Now, that false god is named Christos.
Yes.
As in Christ, and then Truman is true man.
I hadn't thought of that.
It kind of harkens back to the old morality plays of the Renaissance era, so those kinds of names. But this sort of points the way as to what's going on in the movie. Truman has to find a truthful life, and it's up to him to choose, ultimately, whether or not he will pick the truth versus the lie. And it's interesting because he lives in this idyllic, picture-perfect town. He's got a beautiful wife, a nice house, a great car. I mean, he lives the American dream. And he knows this, but it's a lie. And the discovery that it's a lie sort of tears it all down and erases it all, because it's not worth it if it's a lie. And he's given the choice at the moment you point out where Christos, the false, in my mind, that's the false Christ, the false God, speaks to him. He can choose to live in that world and be happy, or he can go out to the real world and face the real challenges of life. And even though, getting into a spoiler here, I guess, so he leaves the idyllic life behind. And you get the sense, though, that the real life in this movie is better than this false idyllic life, that perfection, even though it's false, because it's false, is not as good as imperfection as long as it's real.
Well, that
we
raises...
seek the truth as human beings, and we need the truth.
Yeah, that's quite a theme. Do we want something that's pleasant and comfortable at the expense of it being a lie, or do we want the truth, painful as the truth might be?
That's right. It's a very good theme, and it's a good question, and I think everybody has to answer that for themselves. In Life of Brian, they choose the lie. Though it's a lot funnier the way they choose the lie in that movie. Now, the next film on the list is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
The Coen Brothers.
I love the Coen Brothers.
Yes,
I've got to have them
many
Coen
Brothers movies.
And you're probably one of the Christmas reference. Well, there is no Christmas reference in this movie.
You just had to put it on your list, Christmas or not.
I said this was unconventional.
Was there at least an Easter reference? Did they even mention Groundhog Day? Was there any holiday at all mentioned?
No, actually, I don't think there's any holiday mentioned, but this is probably one of the most Christian-themed films I'll ever see.
Okay,
it's
Christian-themed films. You couldn't have Christian without Christ. You couldn't have Christ without Christmas. So sure, it connects. It connects.
There you go. It's what Christmas is all about.
It's a true meaning of Christmas.
Exactly.
So true, you don't even need to mention the word Christmas. We're so confident it's a Christmas movie, we don't even need to prove it to anybody.
There you go.
Okay.
So you've nailed it on the head. I don't think there's any question now that this is a Christmas movie to anybody out there. Well, I think one of my favorite scenes in the film is there's a baptism that takes place. And it's not, you know, I've seen baptisms where it just is so hokey and dumb. But this is done so well and so authentically in this movie. It is truly beautiful. It's like it's just they respect this event, a baptism, which is a very important event in any Christian's life. They have a great respect for it. And it's well filmed, beautifully done. The song that plays over it is absolutely awesome. Music plays a big role in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And this is a movie about three convicts that escape to find a treasure. But as they discover as they go, it's not really about them finding a treasure. It's about one of the convicts lying to them and wanting to get home to his wife.
Well, it's really a retelling of Homer's The Odyssey.
The Odyssey,
more than anything.
Which the Coen brothers had actually never read, apparently.
But so, at least it said, Where Art Thou? That King James type language makes it very Christmassy indeed.
That's right. Well, hey, if they can write a movie about The Odyssey without actually having read The Odyssey, I can have it be a Christmas movie without actually.
Absolutely.
So
they paved the way for you. We've come
full circle here. But what's great about this baptism scene is the choice that two of them make to get baptized, and one of the first one to be baptized, when they show him get baptized and come out of the water, it's just, I mean, it reminds me of my own baptism. It's just so well filmed. And his lie, he delivers this line, he has a long diatribe afterwards, and then he said, come on in, boys, the water is fine. And one of them throws his hat down and charges into the water to get baptized himself. It's just really, really well done. George Clooney, the main character in the film, rejects all of this throughout the film. So you get all perspectives. You get the people, the person that wants to seek God and seek faith. And then there's the person that rejects up until the very last minute, rejecting. And it's just a very good movie because you can really see different perspectives of people's relationships with God and the choices they make.
Now, you're not normally a George Clooney fan, or is he starting to grow on you?
I hated George Clooney. This is the movie that made me a George Clooney fan.
Well, you're picking excellent movies, stretching them and making holiday movies out of them as part of the fun. I'm going to have you on next year. I told you this. I should have thought of this. Next year, I'm going to have you on again. I'm going to have you talk about the movies, and then we'll have a contest and see if somebody could phone in and guess what's holiday about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think they're having a hard enough time guessing as it is, even when I'm telling them. Okay, so now, again, to wrap up, O Brother, Where Art Thou, the things I liked about the baptism scene was there's first the giving over to accepting God or accepting the forgiveness offered. And the desire for that freedom, they're convicts and they want freedom and they want forgiveness. And you see that authentically in this film. But then also you see authentically the disdain of the quote unquote thinking man as George Clooney plays. But, you know, so you again, you get all a bunch of different perspectives about how people view God. And that's one of the powers of this film and one of the reasons I liked it so much. Now, Eyes Wide Shut, the next movie. I think this is the artsy Christian movie because you have to really be artsy to catch this.
Artsy movie that was... Now, I loved this movie. I'm a big Stanley Kubrick fan like you are. I love this movie, but Christians pillaged this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I should say the Christians that pillaged this movie probably didn't go to see the movie.
And even if they did, it would be hopeless because they wouldn't be willing to look at the film for what it is offering, for the depth and for the themes, and even for the primary conflict.
Well, the only depth they noticed was some partial nudity. They noticed a lot of depth there. But
now, there was partial nudity? I thought it was full nudity. There.
I don't remember it being full nudity, but now I did say it. There may be people that want to stop listening to the radio. But this was a movie whose theme was actually a family theme if you could make it through the movie to the end.
Yes, exactly.
But nobody could get beyond the, I'm going to call it partial nudity, because that's the way I remembered it, and my radio career would probably be better describing it that way. but I thought
softcore pornography thought, down well, as part of the description.
I wouldn't have called it that. And I have to say, when I saw this movie, I felt Stanley Kubrick could have told the same story without putting in partial nudity. However, he's not a Christian director, so I'm not going to hold him to the same standards, but I still think, for me, the message is primarily the way you evaluate a movie, what the movie's trying to say.
That's right. Now, I think it works on a couple of different levels, but I think what you're pointing out, the primary conflict of this film is a man who is struggling with whether or not to cheat on his wife.
His wife is having the same struggle.
Exactly. It's two people with that struggle, whether or not to cheat on their spouse. And you, as a film goer, I felt like on the edge of my seat, not wanting them to cheat. You want them to stay together. And I think that is, to me, it's very powerful in a film when there's so much nudity and so much opportunity for cheating that comes along that would be easy and free and cheap, but you still don't want them to do it. You don't want them to do it the whole time. And that is, again, why one of the reasons the movie's theme is so good, because it's, you see so much nudity, so much sex. There's a huge orgy scene in the film, and yet and Christians have condemned it for that, like, incessantly. And it had an NC-17 rating originally, and because they thought nobody would see it, they took out some of the nudity they covered. They digitally blocked some stuff out, and they gave it an R rating instead. And, I mean, this is how the movie was seen, but nobody wanted to look beyond it. That's why it's an artsy movie. You've got to be able to go in and look beyond the surface.
And it's very ironic because how often would we expect secular Hollywood to come out with a movie that's pro-monogamy and pro-family? Not that it helped Nicole Kidman's and Tom Cruise's marriage because they split up afterwards.
Yeah,
but the characters they were playing in the movie stayed together, which is the important thing.
Exactly. And in the context of this huge sexual, I mean, this a massive amount of sexuality that you see in the film, and yet you still want him not to cheat.
Okay, now let me curtail some of the mail that I might get as a result of this. In the Bible, there were times when Christians would agree on what is sinful, but they would disagree on where to put their fence. This came up when the Apostle Paul was asked if people could eat meat that had been offered to an idol. And he said, look, if you don't really believe in the idol, it's just meat. But if you have a brother who's eating that meat's going to tempt them to worship idols, then don't eat it in front of him. So we're not encouraging anybody out there to go against their conscience. If going to a movie that has what I remembered as partial nudity, if that's going to make you want to go out and do things that the Bible says you shouldn't do, then don't go see the movie. But at the same time, we would hope you wouldn't be judgmental upon somebody who might see this movie and say, I got a monogamous message out of it. And I think that's been a real problem in the church, is we get into all these arguments of where to put up our fence. We all agree on where falling off the cliff is, but we get into arguments over where to put the fence. And some would put up their fence and say, I would never see an R-rated movie, period. Others say, no, I would see it, and then evaluate it in its own right.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to detract too much from your reviews,
no,
but
right.
I think we probably have a few worried listeners out there.
So I absolutely agree
I want
with
to console
what you just
them
said.
A little bit.
There are people that this would be challenging for because to me, the nudity was, I mean, the women in this film are absolutely beautiful, and they are mostly nude, and there are some very major close-ups in this film. So it's a hard movie to watch. I took my wife to see it with me for that reason, because I knew what I was getting into before I went. So
you didn't want to dare tell her you saw it without her, so you brought her.
No,
let me ask you something. Would you agree with what I said? Could Kubrick have made the same movie? Could it have had the same impact if he didn't show that much nudity?
No.
I didn't feel it was necessary. Why did you feel?
I felt it was because there's a scene where Tom Cruise walks through the orgy and he's wearing a mask. Everybody's masked in this film in the
which
orgy.
Which was a harrowing, dark scene.
Exactly. You've nailed it, because it is such a harrowing, dark scene. Why is that? You think of an orgy, you think of people having wonderful, joyful, exciting sex. But in this film, it is depicted as something horrifying, horrific. Something,
yeah, you don't really go out of there feeling lustful. You go out of there feeling, well, we keep using
bothered.
The word bothered. We keep using the word horrified because it's a good word. You're very disturbed by it. So it doesn't have the effect of getting people off on some sexual fantasy that somebody might think they're going to have going to see this movie.
Right, exactly. And the thing is Stanley Kubrick was very visual in how he communicates things, and that's one of the reasons I really love him as a filmmaker. This is a very visual scene. Pardon the pun. Of course, the sexuality is part of the visual element, but Tom Cruise's mask, he's wearing a mask that has this quite horrible look on its face. It's almost like he's got a yawning mouth, and the mouth is actually stretched out in horror itself. So you're getting the communication that this not all right, not as all right well here, through the way Tom Cruise's eyes are and the way his mask is shown, as well as, you know, what you're seeing. And so it's a very well done scene, and this is the scene that garnered the movie the NC-17 rating and garnered it all of its criticism. So I think the scene is an absolute necessity in this film. But again, it's challenging for some people, and they maybe shouldn't see it. Like I said, I took my wife because sometimes sexual elements in films are a problem for me, and I wanted to be there with my wife.
So you figured if she was there, that would be kind of a safeguard for you.
Because right, and you know,
before we go on, what was Christmas about Eyes Wide Shut?
The setting, it's set at Christmas time. The whole movie is set at Christmas time. Okay. And I think that adds to the film's he's doing all of this at the family time of year, Christmas. So it adds to the conflict of the film. It's an imperative.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.